John chapter 15, verses 12 through 17. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you, that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name he may give you. These things I command you, that you love one another.
Sick, and then Leithy got sick, and Nate was like a few months old, and on Saturday, I got sick with a bad head cold, and by Saturday night, I didn't have a voice, and so I preached an entire meeting with laryngitis. I'm not sure how I did it, but anyway, it's not that bad, but they get there. George Burns once said, regarding Jack Benny, he said, Jack and I had a wonderful friendship for nearly 55 years. Jack never walked out on me when I sang, and I never walked out on him when he played violin. We laughed together, we played together, we worked together, we ate together. I suppose that for many of those years, we talked every day. I'm going to tell you, that's a rare kind of friendship. Most of us are blessed if we have a handful of very, very close friendships in this life. And to have a friendship like that that endures for five, almost six decades is just almost unthinkable. It's rare. It's like finding a large jewel. It's rare, but precious the moment you see it. There are a lot of people who struggle with something as simple as friendship. I say as simple, something like friendship. Sometimes even people that we might think would have had a lot of friends turns out didn't. Abraham Lincoln was one of these characters who seemed to really struggle with friendships. Now, he was a great leader, and he did not lack for political ambition, but one area that plagued him for a long time in his life was just lack of close personal friendships. He proposed to a woman by the name of Mary Owens by letter in 1837, and as he wrote, this kind of gives you an idea of his level of self-esteem and his confidence in friendship, but after proposing to her in this letter, somewhere near the end of the letter, he said, my opinion is that you had better not do it. About a year later, he was writing to a woman by the name of Orville Browning. It was a woman that he knew, was a good friend of his. So in 1838, he was reflecting again on marriage and his lack of it. And he said, I have come to the conclusion never again to think of marrying, and for this reason, I can never be satisfied with anyone who would be blockhead enough to marry me. So he kind of had a low opinion of himself, and apparently he struggled with developing these close kinds of friendship. Yet, when he died, Lincoln was one of the most respected men on this earth. Edwin Stanton, who was his war secretary during the last phases of the Civil War, at one time he was a bitter rival and bitter enemy of Lincoln. And yet when he died, he became one of his closest friends and greatest admirers. When he died, he said, now he belongs to the ages. That was the great kind of respect that Stanton had developed for him. In the Bible, we occasionally read of some very powerful friendships. I think one of the most remarkable friendships in the Bible is the friendship between Ruth and Naomi, an older woman and a young woman. And Naomi, or Ruth, was probably just in her teenage years when this story unfolds. And yet they had a remarkably strong friendship. Another great illustration of friendship in the Bible is that between Jonathan and David. That was just a powerful, powerful friendship. And they had so many obstacles between them, namely Jonathan's dad. But there were a lot of other cultural factors that might have prevented them from being friends. There was a kind of friendship between Elijah and Elisha. I know Elisha was a great admirer of Elijah, who was his older mentor. You have a remarkable story of friendship between Lazarus and Mary and Martha and Jesus. Likewise, a closeness between Peter and James and John and Jesus. They were his closest disciples, and he privileged them to see some things that none of the other disciples got to see. Paul and Barnabas appear to be very close for a while in their early travels. Paul and Timothy develop a very close friendship, almost a father-son type relationship. So the Bible is full of examples of great, great friendships and what they can look like, at least when they're tempered by a love not only for one another, but a love for God. And the Bible also has some instructions about it as well. We just read a passage from John chapter 12. We talked about Jesus and his friendships with his apostles. I think it's interesting that on this last night of his earthly life, he spoke to his disciples at many levels that night. But one of the things he wanted to stress to them was the fact that he considered them to be friends. There in John chapter 15, he says in verse 13, "Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you." So he viewed them as friends. And what I want to do for the remainder of our lesson tonight is talk about friendship as it is portrayed in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs, probably more than any other book in the Bible, has a lot of very practical things to say about this subject of friendship. One of the most commonly known Bible passages comes from Proverbs 18, verse 24, which is the basis of the title. And he says, "A man of too many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And I'm sure that's the kind of friendship that we all want. We'll look at three things before I do this. If you look up in the English version, is the idea of friend or neighbor. Those words occur 38 times in 33 verses in the book of Proverbs. Now, most of those come from the Hebrew word rei, and rei occurs 33 times in 30 verses. It can be translated either as neighbor or friend, and it's determined largely by the context. If the context indicates someone who is emotionally close to you, then it usually translates it as friend. If it's denoting someone who is spatially close, like they live close to you, then it translates it as neighbor. And then there's a few passages probably just better off flipping a coin to the side because the context isn't much help. But it's a very common theme then in the book of Proverbs. We'll talk about three things in our lesson: value of friendship, things that help us in our friendships, and things that hurt us in our friendships. In Proverbs chapter 18, I just read this verse a moment ago. This is probably a foundational verse. Wisdom literature, when you look at like Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, if you look at the book of Job, passages like that talk a lot about friendship and illustrate it. And it was a very important theme back in ancient times, especially if you were a wise person, you wanted to cultivate friendships. One way of verifying the wisdom of a person was the quality of his friendship. So ancient writers viewed friendship as a very important kind of thing. And that passage that we just read in Proverbs chapter 18, I love how it ends, "There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Now, I suppose that most of us growing up, we think of family as being our innermost circle. But as you get older, you start to develop some friendships outside your family. Probably the first experience that most of us have is with playmates in the neighborhood or people that we go to school with. We start developing friendships, and those are outside the family unit. So sometimes very early we experience this kind of closeness with other people. And as you get older and get more independent, a lot of us, when we went to college, developed some friendships that had absolutely nothing to do with blood relations, just people we met at college. It's been remarkable since the advent of Facebook. I mean, I'm on Facebook a little bit, but in the relatively short time I've been on Facebook, I've reconnected with people that I haven't seen for probably 30, 35, 40 years, going all the way back to high school and college. One really good friend I had in college, his wife died about a year and a half ago, but he and I were just really good friends in college, and we reconnected on Facebook. Just kind of interesting to see that. It's a friendship that we formed in college. We lived across the hall from each other for about 3 years, and he was a music major, and I knew about half the music department from my experiences in high school, so we had a lot of things in common. And still reading his post now, he hadn't changed a whole lot. He's still a lot same kind of personality that he used to be. But you develop these friendships. You might develop them at work. You might develop them with neighbors. You might develop them with other students. But in all of these, you develop this kind of closeness and intimacy. I mentioned Jonathan and David, and I think they are a perfect illustration of Proverbs 18, verse 24. If you go back to the book of 1 Samuel, we're introduced to David in 1 Samuel 17 when he is the young shepherd boy who defeats the giant Goliath, and he instantly becomes a national hero. And one of the people who befriends him is Jonathan. In the opening verses of the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel 18, verse 1, it came about that when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan, that is the son of King Saul, was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered, and Saul set him over the men of war, and it was pleasing in all the sight of the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Such was the great esteem that Jonathan had for David. He treated him just like a brother. And there were so many things that might have kept these men apart in any other set of circumstances. Jonathan was the successor to the throne, came from a very powerful family. By this time, Saul is well established as the king. Then you have David, who's the youngest man in a family of shepherds. So he kind of came from the backside of nowhere. Didn't really have a lot to claim on his own, but they bonded and they formed a lifelong friendship. He found a friend who was closer than a brother. As I said, sometimes circumstances may change, things may alter the closeness and ties that we have with others. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 10 reinforces the idea back in Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs 27, verse 10 says, "Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away." You and I appreciate that in ancient times when communications might take days or weeks or months in times of calamity. Sometimes if you lived far away from your family, you didn't have the luxury of contacting them. Very often you had to rely on somebody who was close by. So the value of friendship is seen that sometimes friendships are even stronger than family ties. Another thing that I think is interesting about friendship in the book of Proverbs is that it is viewed with the idea of constancy. Proverbs 17, verse 17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." Now, I want to give you an illustration of this, and you may think I'm nuts, but I really think that Job's friends are a good illustration of this. Now, I know that Job's friends picked him apart and tried to blame him for all the problems that belonged to him, but nonetheless, I think when the story begins, I think in a sense, even through the story, the fact that they sit with him this whole time, they never really leave him. Now, do they antagonize the fool out of him? Yes. But the fact that they are there through this whole ordeal tells me something about their constancy as friends. Job chapter 2 says in verse 11, that when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, and they made an appointment together to come with to sympathize with him and to comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him, they raised their voices and wept, and each one of them tore his robe, and they threw dust over their heads toward the sky. Then they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. That's friendship. Now again, they proved to be somewhat defective as the story goes. But have you ever had a friend who traveled a great distance because they heard that something was wrong in your life? That's rare. But that's exactly what they did. Three men who traveled, they heard what had happened to Job. They heard of his calamities. They heard of his illness. And they traveled a great distance just to be with him. And I think it's remarkable that for the first week, they didn't come out and say, oh, you know, Job, everything's going to be all right. They probably did the best thing that friends can sometimes do. They sat with him and kept their mouths shut. Actually, when they opened their mouths is when the trouble began, Job's story. But they just sat there with him. They shared in his misery. They shared in his isolation and loneliness. That is what true friendship is about, is this idea of constancy. You're always there. You won't waver. When you like them, you're all good with them. When you don't like them, suddenly the friendship is gone. I've seen friendships like that. Two people are really, really close, and one of them gets tired of it, and then, well, it's not friendship anymore. That's not friendship. Maybe chumminess, maybe a fad. But that's not friendship. Friendship endures, and it has a quality of constancy. Friendship is also useful for the perfection and honing of our character. Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs chapter 27, and this is a fairly well-known proverb. Proverbs 27, verse 17. It says, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Actually, I never really looked closely at that verse until I was preparing for this lesson, but when it says, so one man sharpens another, that's actually a combination of three words. It's a three-way compounded word. What the verse literally says, iron with iron sharpens, and man sharpens another, and then what our English translations don't put in there is two other words that are connected to the word another. What it says is, and man sharpens another friend of his, is what the text literally says. So it's not just talking about two people in general, it's actually talking about two friends. And when friendship is done the way it should, two friends should be able to grow off of one another. I think one of the greatest characteristics of true friendship is that each friend delights in the growth of the other. They don't try to smother one another. They don't try to stifle the other one. They don't want them to I'm going to control this person. I'm going to make this person turn out the way I want them. No. If the other person has success, you think that's great if you're their friend. If the other person is struggling, you struggle with them. If you can help them grow, if you can help them be successful, that is where your delight is. And so the value of friendship is when we're able to hold our character with one another. And finally, the value of friendship is seen in the influence that friendship yields and wields among those we're close to. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 26. And that's not the right verse. Verse 29, it sort of says the opposite of this. It deals with the same subject in a negative way. Verse 29, a man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. Good friends are concerned about their influence. Now, again, that's a negative statement of it. I guess I wrote down the wrong verse here. The idea is that friendship is a positive thing, and we are concerned about the influence that we have on other people within our friendships. If I'm a friend to you, if you're a friend to me, I would never want to do something that would harm you. I I would never want to do something that would lead you down the wrong moral, spiritual path. Good friends are very concerned about the character that we yield. So there have been some interesting studies about the importance of our relational ability. Friendship, I think, is one of those places where we develop our capacity to relate to other human beings. I think that's one of the values of friendship. The Carnegie Institute of Technology did a study one time, and they determined that success in your field of work is 15% technical knowledge and 85% relational ability. In other words, you don't really have to be that good at your job, but you do have to be very good at relating to others. And a similar study was done by Dr. William Menninger. He did a study on why people are discharged from their jobs. 20-40% lose their jobs because of technical incompetence. 60-80% of people lose their jobs because of social incompetence. So, again, you don't really have to be all that good at what you do. You do have to be good at how you relate to the people that you work with, the people you work for. That's a critical component in the workforce. When I worked for H&R Block many years ago, the lady that trained me, she did a lot of my training every year. She was a really good tax preparer. She knew her stuff, number one. And she had just been around the business long enough. She told us that she was trying to we were in a class, and I think it was a bunch of brand new preparers. And she was talking about the importance of just developing a rapport with the tax client. She said, don't just glue your eyes to the computer screen and mumble numbers and all that kind of stuff. She said, talk to them, put them at ease. And she said that she worked with a guy in one of her offices one time. She said he was not the best tax preparer in the office, not by a long shot. In fact, she said his skills as a tax preparer were pretty mediocre. But because he was so good with people, he had more requests. And that's a big thing in taxes, is that you get the same people coming back every year. She said he had more requests than anybody in the office just because he was that good with people. And he said, now, double-check your taxes when he got done, but he was really good with people. So relational skills have a lot to do with our success in life. Proverbs talks about things that help us in our friendship. Number one is generosity. Go back to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. That's very similar to what the Apostle Paul said in Galatians 6. While we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially those who are of the household of faith. When you've got the opportunity to help someone, you have a moral obligation to render that assistance. But notice how he elaborates this. He illustrates it in verse 28. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it to you. Give it when you have it with you. Do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives securely beside you. If you have the opportunity to help your friend or your neighbor, you help them. That is the morally right thing to do. There's a similar expression of this over in chapter 14, Proverbs 14, verse 21. He who despises his neighbor sins, and happy is he who is gracious to the poor. We've got to be willing, in these contexts, he's talking about helping people materially. But sometimes it's not a matter of giving people money or things. Sometimes it's a matter of giving them your ear, giving them your time, giving them your attention. Those things can be every bit as important as money, sometimes more important. How generous are you with your time in helping other people? How generous are you when people come to you and talk with their problems? Do you actually listen to what they're saying? That's an important friendship skill. There's an interesting story about Albert Einstein. Now, I'm going to tell you this about Albert Einstein, and it's to his everlasting credit, but don't go away from this thinking that Albert Einstein was a saint. He wasn't. He had a lot of moral defects. But when his wife died in 1936, he had a sister by the name of Maja. And Maja came and lived with him for many, many years. She cared for him, took care of the household, took care of a lot of things that he wasn't able to do. In 1950, so about 14 years after she came to live with him, she suffered a stroke, and it was such a severe stroke, she was in a coma for the rest of her life. Out of his deep gratitude for her, every day he read to her read Plato, and I know I'm thinking, well, maybe that kept her in the coma, but I don't know. Don't mean to be mean about that. Plato wouldn't be my first choice, but I think that's a remarkable thing that he was so grateful to her for what she had done for him. She took 2 hours out of her day, or he took 2 hours out of his day every day to read to her. It's an example of being generous with others. We need to be humble with our friends. A lot of times, I think we Americans suffer way too much from an attitude of self-reliance. We want people to think that we don't need anything, we don't need any help, we don't need anybody, and nothing could be further from the truth. Not a single one of us is totally independent of others. It's not possible to live that way. And if you've ever suffered any kind of tragedy or crisis in your life and have received help from others, don't ever forget that. And don't forget the humility that it takes. Proverbs chapter 6, look at the opening 5 verses. My son, if you have become surety for your neighbor, if you have given a pledge for a stranger, if you have been snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this then, my son, and deliver yourself, since you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, humble yourself, and importune your neighbor. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Now, in this context, he says it could be several things. Maybe you owe him some money. Or maybe you've said something you shouldn't have said. Or maybe it's some other kind of calamity that requires you to go seek help. He says what you need to do is do it quickly, and do it with a humble attitude. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. Now, again, with our American self-reliant, self-sufficient, independent mentality, we hate doing that. Proverbs says that's a mark of true friendship. That's a mark of neighborliness, is that sometimes if you need help, you're willing to go and ask the other person for help. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's everything that's right with it. We need to be concerned about our influence. Proverbs chapter 12, I think this is the verse I was looking for earlier. Proverbs 12, verse 26, Proverbs 12, 26, the righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Proverbs 12:26 indicates, again, the positive nature of influence. We have influence on other people. Probably those that we influence the most outside of family would be our close friends, and we need to be careful about how we influence them and lead them. Proverbs 17 brings up another point. Sometimes the best thing a friend can do is just be there. Maybe you don't have the money to help them. Maybe you don't have an immediate solution. Maybe you don't have the medical knowledge. Maybe whatever area of expertise they need, you may not have. But there's one thing you can always do, and that is you can be there for them. Proverbs 17, verse 17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And then again in Proverbs 27, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. And I like the first phrase in the first line of verse 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. Sometimes friendships that I develop may be passed on to my children. Or maybe a friendship that my father had might be passed on to me, and it might benefit me, or I might be able to benefit them. There's a couple of excellent examples of this in the life of David. David and Nahash, and then Solomon and Hiram, those are friendships that David had formed with certain men. And in the case of Nahash, David had been a friend of his father's. And at one point, he dies, and his son needs help, and David is able to help because of that long-standing friendship. When David's friendship with Mephibosheth, and who was one of the descendants of Jonathan, is another illustration of that. King Solomon benefited from David's friendship with Hiram, who was the king of Tyre, who provided the cedars of Lebanon and a lot of building materials and labor force for the building of the temple. So sometimes friendships can span generations, and simply being there and helping others at all times is an important component of friendship. And then finally, on this point, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 9, reminds us that sometimes good advice is an important component of friendship. Proverbs 27, verse 9, oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. There's nothing like good advice from someone that you know and someone that you trust, and friendship is a good place to exercise that. The book of Proverbs also says there are some things that hurt friendships, and there's a fair amount of material in the book of Proverbs about this. I'm going to concentrate on a handful of points. Number one, avoid broken promises. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27. And again, this is we read this earlier in a different context. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it, when you have it with you. How many times have you promised your friend or your neighbor, oh yeah, I'll take care of that later, and later comes and you still haven't done it? It's called a broken promise, and that's a sure way to hurt a friendship. Keep your word. Gossip and slander always hurt friendships. Proverbs 11, verse 9, with his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. Down again in verse 12 of Proverbs 11. He who despises his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding keeps silent. In other words, sometimes with respect to your friends and your neighbors, the best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut. Don't ruin it by opening your mouth and spreading things that are simply not true or not valuable. Proverbs 24, verse 28 says the same thing again. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, and do not deceive with your lips, and do not say, thus I shall do to him as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. Your words can get you into trouble, and words are a powerful way of ruining friendships. We've talked about influence. I'm going to repeat that point. Proverbs 16, verse 29, you avoid bad influence. Another interesting thing that the book of Proverbs brings up in several cases is the idea of insincere and shallow friendships. Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs 19, this is an interesting proverb, verse 4. Wealth adds many friends. Wow. Imagine that. Someone with a lot of friends, suddenly people want to be friendly with them if they find out that you're wealthy. Wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. What that suggests is a lot of times friends may not be what they seem. And if the only difference is somebody likes your money or they don't like your poverty, there's probably a high degree of probability that it's not real friendship. So you need to beware then of these false friends. And finally, poor and shallow judgment. There's at least three illustrations of this in the book of Proverbs, each dealing with a different sphere of friendship. Proverbs 25, verse 16. Have you found honey? Eat only what you need, that you may not have it in excess and vomit it. Now, that's kind of a nasty sounding proverb, but basically it says too much of a good thing isn't too good. But read how it applies it in the next verse, verse 17 of Proverbs 25. Let your foot be rarely in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you. Sometimes friends need a break. Sometimes friends need a break from one another. And sometimes neighbors just need to say, well, it's nice seeing you. I'll see you next week. We don't have to be in one another's business all the time. And sometimes space is a good thing. Lack of judgment can prevent those kinds of problems. Proverbs 26, verse 29, another kind of poor judgment. Proverbs chapter 26. That should be verse 19. I am just full of typos tonight. Proverbs 26, verse 19. Or 18 and 19, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows of death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, wasn't I joking? You didn't think that was funny? You know, pranks are fine in their place, but sometimes pranks are a good way to ruin a friendship. And then finally, Proverbs 27, verse 14, it's a spin on the old proverb that silence is golden. Proverbs 27, verse 14, he who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. Sometimes just keep your mouth shut if they haven't had their coffee yet. That's a good piece of advice. In other words, if you're not careful about the judgment that you exercise, friendships can be ruined. And so good friends try not to take advantage of these friendships. When I was thinking about this subject, working on this lesson, I remembered the lyrics. Anybody remember this song, Friends Are Friends Forever? Written by Michael W. Smith. I didn't realize how old this song was until I looked it up. This was written by Michael W. Smith and his wife, Debbie, back in 1983. This thing's 31 years old. An old song. But I love the chorus. And friends are friends forever if the Lord's the Lord of them. And a friend will not say never, because the welcome will not end. Though it's hard to let you go, in the Father's hands, we know that a lifetime's not too long to live as friends. I think that's an excellent view of what friendship is in the Lord. And what Proverbs has given us in our lesson tonight is some just sage advice, not worldly advice about friendships, but godly advice about friendships. If you have a close friend in this world, you want to keep them. And you want to treat them in such a way that you can remain friends for the rest of your life, if at all possible. And the Bible gives us not only some good examples of friendship, but also some very sage advice about how to handle it. This is just an illustration of the fact that God rules every part of our lives. He rules every relationship that we have. But that's possible only if our relationship to the Lord Jesus Christ is what it ought to be. If you're here tonight and you need to adjust your relationship to Christ in some way, we want to help you while we stand and sing.